The last parak in Yuma is all about the halachos and the hashkafa of Yom Kippur that we need to know about. And that's why I thought it's not Shloshim Yom Kodem HaChag, but it's at least close enough for us to begin a discussion about the mitzvos hayom of Yom Kippur and how we should properly observe it. So we begin with the following. Before we get into the first Mishnah is in Yuma, on Daf Ayin Gimel Amud Beis, where the Mishnah goes through all the different Isurim that are relevant, that are applicable to Yom Kippur. And before we get there, one has to ask themselves, all of the sources for the Inui on Yom Kippur, for all the different restrictions that we have in Yom Kippur, stem from a Pasuk in Sefer Vayikra, where the Pasuk says, V'haysa lachem l'chukas olam, b'chodesh ha-shvi'i, seventh month, be'asor lachodesh, the tenth of the month, which is Yom Kippur, ta'anu es nafsho seichem, we have an obligation to be ma'ane, to afflict our neshama. Now the Torah doesn't really tell us exactly how we're supposed to do that. The Torah doesn't define how one is supposed to afflict themselves at all, which we're going to have to get into a discussion in our Gemara as to how exactly we determine what is called an inui and what perhaps is not. So do I have an obligation, the Gemara is going to ask later on, to do anything that pains me on Yom Kippur? Should I take needles and stick them into my body? Obviously not, that's going to cause dam. But let's say, should I stand on my head? Should I walk with my hands and knees because it makes me uncomfortable? Anything that's unusual, anything that's going to make me feel stranger is something that I should do on Yom Kippur, or perhaps it's only limited to the defining characteristics that are mentioned in the Gemara. So we'll get to that later. But before we get to all of that, we have to ask ourselves a very obvious question, and that is, now that we know the parameters of Inui, now that the Mishnah of the Gemara is going to tell us what is permissible on Yom Kippur and what perhaps is not, so we have to ask ourselves, says the Stechemed, why is it that we don't recite a bracha while performing these mitzvahs on Yom Kippur? We're performing all kinds of mitzvahs. It seems to be sourced back in the Torah, tanu es nafsho seichem, don't eat, don't drink, whatever it means, but it means something, and we do something on Yom Kippur, or we refrain from doing something on Yom Kippur based on that pasuk. Why is there no bracha that's recited? So the Stechemed goes into a discussion about this. And his suggestion, I think, would be the obvious suggestion that all of us would have said. And the only reason I bring it here is because he is only saying what he's saying because he is trying very hard to battle against those who said otherwise. So I want to read it together. Let's see what the Stechemed writes. So the Stechemed says as follows. Mashalo tiknu bracha al mitzvahs inui b'yom ha-kippurim. Says the Stechemed, why do we not have a bracha on the mitzvah of fasting on Yom Kippur, of not eating and not drinking? Hayanirli hatam pashut, he says, the reason is very obvious. Mishum shelo tiknu bracha ela al davar shehu b'maisa. We only make brachos on something that we actively perform. So we don't go around and make a bracha every time we sit down to eat a meal and say, Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu melech ha'olam, that you gave me the mitzvah not to eat chazer, that you gave me the mitzvah not to eat shkatzim urmasim, not to eat treifa food. It goes without saying. We make a bracha that we're about to eat the food. We don't make a bracha for not doing something. So too over here, he says, we don't recite a bracha on not eating and not drinking on Yom Kippur because that is not an active mitzvah. So we make a bracha, he says, lahaniach tefillin, because we're about to do an active mitzvah. And he says we make a bracha lisate patzitzis. Aval al mitzvah shehi below maisa. When you have a mitzvah, like the mitzvah of tanu es nafsho seichem, which means don't eat and don't drink, we don't make a bracha all day long on Yom Kippur that, oh, now I'm being mekayem the mitzvah of not eating and not drinking, because that is a mitzvah that we perform passively, and therefore lo tiknu bracha kemosha lo tiknu bracha al kiyam halav. Fine. V'zeh pashut, he writes, umuskam, this is obvious, dalmania ye ein shayach levarach, that when a person is holding themselves back from violating an avera, we find no such concept as reciting a bracha on something of that nature. V'im kein, and therefore, eich yivarech, amasha einu ochel v'shose. Furthermore, he says, at which point in the day are you going to recite the bracha? Every 5 minutes? Every 10 minutes? Maybe every time you're hungry? What are you going to do? Dim kein, yir kala yom kulo yoshev v'mivarech. So it doesn't make sense. We have a mitzvah not to talk Lashon Hara. So many of us might not be so careful about it, but we don't talk Lashon Hara all day. So maybe I should make a bracha every 5 minutes of the day. Shekidushan mitzvot tzivanu shelo ledaber Lashon Hara rechilus. Maybe I should make it every minute of the day, he says. We don't have a way of gauging how exactly to do such a thing. And he says that's the second reason why we only have a mitzvah on a mitzvah activity that we're doing, a positive commandment that we're fulfilling in action. And therefore, he says, that's very defined. We know exactly when to make the bracha. However, when you have a circumstance where all you're doing is not violating something else, We don't recite a bracha. That's the general rule, he writes.
But all the examples he gives are low sasens. And we need some of that for shame, they're not saying.
Correct. So he says, the same way he wants to draw a parallel, the same way that we don't make a bracha on not violating a losaseh, so too, he says it's a chiddush, but he says, so too, it would make sense that we also shouldn't make a bracha on a mitzaseh, a very correct point that you're making, but he says he doesn't see a difference, he doesn't see a distinction. Achra isi. So he says, why am I even getting into this discussion? It would seem to be obvious to any of us that that's the reason. He says, the reason why is because I saw in a sefer, Yafel Alev. I don't even know what the Sefer Yafel Alev is, but the Stechemet had an amazing Bikias. He read and he knew everything without a computer. And he says that the Sefer Yafel Alev brings from his brother of Yosef. I don't know who these people are, but obviously if the Stechemet quotes them and gives them room on his page, it means it's someone to think about. So he writes, Lamalo tiknu levarach asher kedushanu b'mitzvos v'tzivanu lanos nefesh. Why don't we make a bracha on Yom Kippur that we have a special mitzvah to be ma'ane as hanefesh? After all, this is one of the 613 mitzvahs. And the Rambam does count it amongst all the other minin mitzvahs. Not only does the Rambam count Inui as a mitzvah, but all the Rishonim count Inui as a mitzvah. So why do we not make a bracha on the mitzvah of Inui? So he gives two reasons why he considers this to be an exception to the rule. Why would we not recite a bracha on this mitzvah? And we're going to go through reason number one, and perhaps why it's incorrect. Aleph, he says, Al pi ma shekosva akadmonim, dal mitzvah haba ba'aveira ein mevarchim. So the Achronim write, that we don't make a bracha on something which is a mitzvah haba ba'aveira. So take for example, the Achronim say, I go ahead and I steal money from someone. Now I have a mitzvah, ve'eshev es akzela. When I finally get back to my senses, I have to give it back. I go and I steal an item from someone, I have to give them back the item. So it might not happen immediately, but at some point I have to do it. So now that I go back to my friend's house and I give him back the item, I have to go and make a bracha beforehand and say, Asher kedushanu mitzvosu v'tzivanu lahashiv es akzela? No! God didn't tell you to steal in the first place. You did something wrong, which brought you to this point. So now that you're doing this, and it's a result, it's an outgrowth of something that you did wrong, say the kadmonim, you don't make a bracha on that. Similarly, he says, ribis. When you have the situation of ribis. So I'm not allowed to charge ribis. If I did charge ribis, I have to give it back. So, what's the halach in a case like that? When I give back the ribis, should I make a bracha when I return the ribis that I took when I wasn't supposed to take it? Do I make a bracha now, lahachzer es haribis? Or he says, sreifas noser. I have a very specific time period when I'm allowed to eat a carbon. Now, unfortunately, I did the wrong thing. I kept the carbon around longer than I was supposed to. Now I have a mitzvah to burn it. So now before I burn it, I should make a bracha, asher kedushanu mitzvosu v'tzivanu, Lisrofes anosar, al sreifas anosar, why should he make such a bracha? You did an aveira, which brought you to this point. And therefore the kadmonim say, any time that the mitzvah came about as a result of an aveira that you were involved in, we assume a bracha is not supposed to be recited. V'im kein, and therefore he says, listen to his chiddush, it's so wrong, but it's so beautiful. Kivon, shemitzvas inri v'yom ha-kippurim. Why am I fasting on Yom Kippur, he says? Because it's al hachet, lechaper al avonoseinu kedechsiv b'parshas acharei mos. After all, the Ribbono Shel Olam does a chesed for us. He gives us an opportunity once a year to get a kapara for the averus that we did all year. And it says, Tanu es nafshosechem ki bayom hazeh yichaper aleichem v'chein kasev Rabbeinu Achinuch b'mitzvah shin yud gimel shahayim ichazde Hashem yizbarach abri Yosef l'kvo yomecha l'chaper al chatoseichem v'chein kasev Rabbeinu Atur. And therefore he says, v'kivan she'abracha ba l'sakin mashachata. Since the only reason why I'm keeping Yom Kippur is because I did terrible averus and I need one day to save myself, lachein ein ze mevarich. He says that's the same as if a person stole and now they give back the item that we don't recite a bracha. A person went ahead and left a carbon over after this mom when you were allowed to have it in your home. You have to do a sreifa, you have to burn it, but you don't make a bracha on that because you did an avera which led you to do this mitzvah. So to over here he says, what brought me to Yom Kippur? The only thing that brought me to Yom Kippur was the fact that I did an Avera this year. So he says, that's a mitzvah of Avera. Now that's a pella. Oh, so says the Stechemet, 1 minute. He says, Ein ani d'dom l'rayi, what are you talking about? D'ba'a shavas akzela, he says, by the mitzvah, this is the Stechemet asking back. He says, it can't be, it's not true. D'ba'a shavas akzela, when I steal something from an individual, and now I go back and give it to them, im adam yodea shalo gazal, if a person knows, I didn't steal. I'm an honest person. I never steal from people. Eino b'mitzvah zuklal. This mitzvah is totally irrelevant to me. It's only a mitzvah that's designated for the person that was involved in that terrible activity of stealing. Avo mitzvahs ine b'yom kippurim. If you have the mitzvah of fasting on Yom Kippur, and you're a person who was a tzaddik all year long, so you'll say, every tzaddik does an aveira. Everybody does something wrong, right? Let's say a person was in a coma all year long. They couldn't do an aveira. It was impossible. They were in a coma. They went in a coma last Yom Kippur. They get out of it miraculously, Erev Yom Kippur, mamish, right before Yom Tov. Impossible that they did any aveira in the past year. What are you going to tell me? I shouldn't fast Yom Kippur? Of course I should. The Torah gives me a mitzvah to fast on Yom Kippur regardless. Happens to be, Yom Kippur is the day when we get a mechilas avonis. Yom Kippur is the day when I can do tshuva, and my tshuva is accepted. But if a person lived a whole year where they did no aveiras, for whatever reason it was, you're going to tell me that that person, Yom Kippur, doesn't apply to?
How could you make a bracha?
Someone what?
How could you make a bracha on Yom Kippur and he's going to fast? He may not complete the fast.
So maybe I should make a bracha at the end? The same way we say Aneinu at the end of a tainus. No, the same way Rashi says we don't say Aneinu at the beginning of a tainus because maybe it's going to be Nimsa Shakran B'Tfilaso. So if you say Aneinu and Shachris, maybe it's going to turn out at the end of the day that you're not going to do the right thing because you're going to end up breaking it. But Mincha time, we allow you to say Aneinu. What? So same over here. One, you say, let's make a bracha on the mitzvah of Inui at the end of Yom Kippur. At some point, right? What's the deraisa?
Yom Kippur.
Okay. Okay. Not sure it's a chilek that makes a difference here. So losis is a machlokes arishonim, whether it's isa deraisa, isa derabanan. Again, it's a question. When would you make the bracha? It's a good question. But he says, how can you say such an assumption? How can you say the reason we don't make a bracha on the inui of Yom Kippur is because it's only made for the person who doesn't have aver? What do you mean? So someone who doesn't do an aveira, doesn't fast on Yom Kippur, doesn't observe Yom Kippur, of course they do. And he writes, Sha'af im chata kodem lachen, mikamako min ha-Torah la-yichashev Hashem lo-avan, b'chol zos, lo darshinon taime dekora le-patra mi-mitzvah sinui. A person has an obligation to fast on Yom Kippur regardless of him kain. And since that is the case, kiven shemi mitzvah zu ein lifter or so, since nobody is absolved from this obligation of Yom Kippur, v'chol adam bari b'chayuva, Lanos has nafsha b'yom kippurim, and everyone has this equal obligation and opportunity to fast on Yom Kippur. Beinim chata, beinim lo chata, ein zedom la shavas gazel. Has nothing to do with the case of a shavas hagzela. It's not at all the same. She'ena mitzvah ba ela im kein chata. And lachein he writes bedinu shelo levarach. Of course you don't make a bracha. Tehalavai lo chata v'lo yasa mitzvah. Av mitzvah sinoi she'afim lo chata chayiv lekayim a mitzvah. Lama lo yivarech. So the Stechemet writes unequivocally, and I think he's absolutely right, that this argument that's put forth in the Sefer Yafil Alev is something that is hard to swallow, it's hard to understand. So we believe, he writes, as much as the Sefer Achinuch tells us, that yes, the mitzvah of Yom Kippur is something that's a tremendous chesed of the Ribono Shel Olam, and it gives us an opportunity to do tshuva. And we're so lucky to have that chance, and we're so blessed to have the opportunity once a year to do this and to go through that ritual. That doesn't mean that the entire Yom Kippur is only made for the person who does a terrible aveira. Yom Kippur is something that is an absolute day in the calendar every year. Whether you did an aveira in the past year or you didn't. Whether you think you did something wrong that's deserving of 24 hours of fasting or not. Either way, Yom Kippur is something that everyone has an obligation to keep to. And therefore, says the Stechemed, we do not recite a bracha on the mitzvah of Inui on Yom Kippur. Although it's a mitzvah that we find in the Torah itself, Tanuas Nafsho Seichem, it is a mitzvah saseh that is counted among the Taryag mitzvahs and all the Moniah mitzvahs, all the Rishonim. Yet, the reason we don't recite a bracha is because we only make brachas on a mitzvah that requires some sort of action. Sfiras Omer, Tkiyah Shofar, Netilas Lulav, Neres Chanukah. However, when you have a situation where you're just preventing yourself from violating an Isser, or the way to be Mekayim the mitzvah is by not doing something, so then he says we do not recite a bracha on such a mitzvah like that. So, we're going to learn about the various forms of Inui on Yom Kippur, as we'll see in our Mishnah in just about a minute. But the Mishnah clearly indicates to us, as we'll see, that women also seem to have an equal obligation as men in the mitzvah of Inui on Yom Kippur. So the Mishnah will tell us that a woman who's just given birth, maybe there's a certain dispensation for her that Inui doesn't apply to her. She's allowed to wear shoes because it's dangerous for her. But the clear indication of the Mishnah is that, obviously that's the exception to the rule. The woman who just gave birth, or the woman who just got married, the Mishnah says, maybe she's allowed to wash her face, even though the rest of us are not allowed to, but we want her to look good, so she's allowed to. So it seems to be a clear indication from the way the Mishnah is structured that a woman shares the obligation of Inui on Yom Kippur the same way a man does. And this leads many to question, why should we assume that a woman has an obligation of Inui on Yom Kippur? After all, we know that women are not obligated in a mitzvah saseh shahazman groma. So why should we say that a woman is obligated to keep to the mitzvah of Inui on Yom Kippur when, after all, this should be a classical case of mitzvah saseh shahazman groma? This should be a classical case. So the Gemara tells us a principle that Hishva akasav isha le'ish l'chol onshim sheva Torah. The Torah equates men and women with regard to any aveira in the Torah. So you'll tell me that any time you have a punishment that the Torah gives for something, for certain specific yisurim, so we assume that men and women are equal for that. But over here we have a mitzvah saseh. That's only by mitzvah losa. Over here we have a mitzvah saseh of tanuas nafshoseichem. So the Chalkas Yov and many other achronim ask, why should women be included in it? Why should a woman have an obligation to keep to Inui on Yom Kippur? Isn't this the classical case of mitzvah saseh shazman groma? Right. So the Gemara makes a special limud. In Pesachim Daf Mem Hei, the Gemara makes a limud that anyone who's included in Baal Tochel Chametz, Yeshno Bekum Ochel Matzah. So that's where you have a separate... Over here, we don't have the limud. The Gemara never says. Yeah. So that's a big discussion in the Minchas Chinuch. Should we assume that women are bechlal the assay of Shabbos? Of Shabbos and Yom Tov. That's the big discussion. That's the very rich discussion in the Minchas Chinuch. How far do we extend the assay of Shabbos? When we say women are obligated in Zachar V'Shamer, how far do we take that? Does that only mean the positive commandments of Shabbos, like Kiddush, they have a mitzvah to do, and other things like that? Or does it also mean the Isurim of Shabbos, which are in Isur Aseh? For example, he gives about Shvisas Behemto. Right, that's the case that the Menchas Chinuch gives about Shvisas Behemto, whether a woman is mitzvah and Shvisas Behemto. That's a little bit outside of our discussion for tonight. But the basic question here is, why should we assume in the Mishnah that women have an obligation to keep to the mitzvah of Inui on Yom Kippur? Isn't this a regular case of mitzvah saseh shazman groma? So the Achronim, in dealing with this question, quote a passage from the Pnei Yeshua, who says as follows. The Pnei Yeshua Maseches Beitzah writes, the only time a woman has a ptur, the only time a woman is absolved from performing a mitzvah saseh shazman groma, is only when you have a kumva aseh. It's only when you have an active mitzvah, for example, tkiyah shofar, or the mitzvah of shaking the lulav, or anything of that nature, which is something they have to do actively. That's when we say, since it's a zman groma, since it's time bound, the woman doesn't have an obligation. But what if you have something which is only passive? Says the Pnei Yeshua, women never had a ptur in the first place. Women were always obligated to do that, because they didn't have to do anything. And therefore, says the Pnei Yeshua, women share the obligation of Inui on Yom Kippur. He doesn't say it, but that's the application they make. Based on that idea, women share the obligation because they never had a ptur, mitzvah seishah zman groma, when there was nothing that had to actually be done, when it can only be performed with a passive and not active. Therefore, says the Pnei Yeshua, women will share the obligation. So the Ksav Sofer and other Achronim say, why should we draw such a distinction? What's the difference between being passive and being active? Either way, it's zman groma. You only have to be passive from eating on this day because it's Yom Kippur. Otherwise, you would be allowed to eat as much as you want. So why do we say women are not obligated? So he explains the reason why is as follows. What's the whole reason in the first place why a woman is not obligated in a mitzvah say shazma groma? Because they're busy doing other things. How can you tell a woman she has to go to shul and listen to shofar and shake the lulav and make sure to do everything else? What about the fact that she has a whole family to take care of? She's busy doing other things. And therefore she can't focus on this because she doesn't have time. Her time is limited because she's busy taking care of other things that she's supposed to be doing. So therefore, since that's the rationale, that only applies to something that we ask her to do. We ask you to actively go and shake the lulav. I don't have time to shake the lulav. We ask you to go to shul and listen to the shofar. I don't have time to listen to the shofar. You're putter, you're right. But now we're going to ask you not to take out of your schedule. All we ask you to do is, don't eat on Yom Kippur. Okay. What? Exactly, it gives you more time to do things. Therefore, says the Ksav Sofer, that's what the Pnei Yeshua meant. And that's why we assume that women are going to be included in this mitzvah here of Inui on Yom Kippur, because after all, the Ptur was never said of mitzvah seishah zman groma when we talk about a situation of Sheva al Tasa instead of a Kumva Aseh. Now, Rabbi Kiva Eger, Masechta Sukkah, finds that very disturbing. He says he doesn't think it's true. Because we have a Gemara Maseches Sukkah Daf Samaches, maybe we'll get to this another time, but we have a Gemara where the Gemara learns from a special pasuk, Kala Ezrach B'Yisrael. So the Gemara says that from the extra word of Ezrach we learn that there's a mitzvah not only to fast on Yom Kippur, but there's a mitzvah also for women to be mekabel the mitzvah of Tosefes Yom Kippur. Men and women alike have a mitzvah to be mekabel Tosefes Yom HaKippur, and we have to add on to Yom Kippur earlier in the day, before the Shkia comes in. And therefore, says the Gemara from this pasuk, we learn that men and women equally have an obligation. So says Rabbi Akiva Eiger, why does the Gemara have to bring a special pasuk to teach me that men and women share an obligation of being Mosif onto Yom Kippur? Isn't that a Sheva Al Tasa? No? Isn't that a mitzvah that you perform by not doing anything? I take Yom Kippur in early. What does that mean? Just means I don't eat for an extra 5 minutes than I otherwise would have. So isn't that a mitzvah which is niskayim b'sheva al tasa? I don't have to actively do anything. It's a passive mitzvah. And yet the Gemara needs a special pasuk to teach me that women have an obligation to do it. Why would you think otherwise? If men have an obligation to do that, and it's a mitzvah that is only performed passively, based on the Pnei Yeshua's theory, we should have said, women had an obligation all along. They never were pater from such a thing.
Two things are for sure. One, you never have to eat Yom Kippur because you just don't eat. But here you have to take upon yourself that I'm not going to
So some Acharonim want to say, the Chalkas Yah very correctly, the Chalkas Yah wants to answer, no, that doesn't happen by itself. Yom Kippur, in order to take a Tosefes, what happens? I come to Shul on Friday night, and I'm making early Shabbos. Does it just become early Shabbos by itself just because I walked into Shul? No. It only becomes early Shabbos because I actively do something to make it Shabbos. I'm a Kabbalah Shabbos on myself. I say Mizmor Shir, I say Baruch Hu, whatever it might be. I have to make a Kabbalah Shabbos in order for it to work. It doesn't happen by itself. So the Chalkas Yav writes, no, this is a mitzvah also that requires something active on my part. And therefore, maybe we should assume that that's why the Torah needs to have a special pasuk to obligate women, because this is not something that happens b'sheva al tasa. It's something that needs the human being's involvement as well in order to be mekabelit. So that's an interesting caveat that Rabbi Akiva Eiger raises from that Gemara Maseches Sukkah. How do you translate that into the discussion that we're having here? Our mission is going to list what we call the Chamesh Inuyim, five different things that one is not allowed to do on Yom Kippur. And those are Achila, one is not allowed to eat. Shtia, one is not allowed to drink. Rechitza means one is not allowed to bathe. Sicha means one is not allowed to put any ointments on them. Ni'ilas ha-sandal, one is not allowed to wear leather shoes. Vitashmish hamita. So, for higher mathematicians, that is six. So the Gemara is going to ask the question, you told me that there are five inuim, isn't that six? So the Gemara says, eating and drinking is all considered one. And we'll have to see exactly what that means, if it really means that all the shiurim are the same, or maybe it just means that we just categorize them as one, but the halachas are going to be perhaps very different between eating and drinking. That will make a big nafkamina later. But those are basically the five categories of things we are not allowed to do. And the Rishonim have a big discussion here. Should we assume that all five of these prohibitions are all considered on the same level? Let's remember, when the Torah discusses the prohibitions on Yom Kippur, it doesn't give us any details of anything. It just says, Tanu es nafsho seichem, which seems very general. Doesn't really give us a description of what we have to do in order to be ma'aneh our nefashos, in order to afflict our souls, doesn't tell us what to do. So we somehow came up with this list of five things. Are all of them considered a part of what the Torah says, Tanu es nafsho seichem? Are all of them considered a real mitzvah daraisa? Or perhaps we should say, maybe some of them are more clearly defined as inui, and some of them are more secondary issues, and therefore they're only issa d'rabbanan. This is a big discussion amongst the Rishonim, whether we assume that outside of eating and drinking on Yom Kippur, which clearly we know that you're chayiv karis for doing, what will be the prohibition for somebody who violates the issur of tashmish amita, or wearing leather shoes, or one of the other of the chamesh sinuim outside of eating and drinking? Should we assume that those are also included in the issur d'araisa, or perhaps those are only isurim midrabanan? So you look at number base here, where the Mishnah Berurah sums it up very quickly, and he says the following. Simen Taf Reish Yud Aleph Hilchos Yom Kippur, the Mishnah Berurah writes, Yei Shomrim, some Rishonim say, Shehu Min HaTorah. Some say, all of the Chamesh HaSinuyim on Yom Kippur are Asim Midaraisa. After all, the Torah says, Tanu Es Nafsho Seichem, in very general terms, and we define what that means. Once we define it, it means everything is subsumed under that pasuk of Tanuos Nafshe Seichem, and everything becomes an Issa Daraisa. V'yei Shomrim, says the Mishnah Brura, other Rishonim, very prominent Rishonim, assume, Rashi and Tosus, She'ena Ela Midrabanan, that the other Inuyim, outside of eating and drinking on Yom Kippur, are only Aser Midrabanan, Ukra Asmachta Ba'alma Ninhu. V'naf Kamina, what's the difference? Aser Daraisa, Aser Midrabanan, either way, you can't do it. So the difference is, says the Mishnah Brura, Le'inyan Eza Safek Ulamaisa Rai Lahachmir. He says if a person has a Safek, am I allowed to do this or not? Is this considered like Tashmish Hamita? Is that considered wearing leather shoes or not? When I'm not sure about something, how machmer do I have to be? We know, Safek Dirabanan Lekula. Therefore he says, if the Shari Nuyim are only a Isser Midirabanan, maybe I have a right to be Mekel. If they're all considered on the same level, in the same category as Isser Midaraisa, therefore says the Mishnah Brura, maybe there's room to say that a person, when in doubt, has the obligation to be machmer the same way we would do for any other Isser Daraisa. So this is what the Mishnah Brura writes. Major machlokes harishonim. The Minchas Chinuch discusses the issue as well, and he finds a second nafkamina amongst others. But he says his second very important nafkamina is whether bein hashmashos of Yom Kippur in both directions, the beginning of Yom Kippur and both the end of Yom Kippur as well, do I have an obligation to keep to the other inuyim? Why should bein hashmashos make a difference? Well, the Gemara has a principle. Kol davar shegazru chachamim lo gazru alav bein hashmashos. Whenever you have a gzeira midrabanan, something which is only an isur derabanan, they didn't make that prohibition applicable during bein hashmashos. That refers to Shabbos. Now, says the Minchas Chinuch, maybe we should apply that to Yom Kippur and say the same. Until it's absolutely nightfall, until bein hashmashos is over, that twilight zone, maybe we should say you can wear your shoes and you're allowed to have tashmish hamita and the other things are permissible. You're allowed to wash your face and wash your hands, because nothing sets in until it's absolutely nightfall of Yom Kippur. And he says that will be dependent on whether we assume this is an Issa d'Araisa or perhaps an Issa d'Rabbana. Now again, we have what the Mishnah Brura advises, that since this is a major and very consequential Machlokas HaRishonim, therefore we assume that L'maisa Roi L'Hachmir. He says, we adopt the opinion that we assume that it's d'Araisa because we have to err on the side of caution, it's very unclear, and therefore he says, that's the practice that we have. So the Rishonim asked the following question. Let's assume that all of the Chamesha Sinuyim are considered on the same level. They're all Aser Midaraisa. They're all subsumed under that Pasuk of Tanuas Nafsho Seichem. So the Rishonim ask a very bothersome question. Our Mishnah is going to say here that we have Chamesha Sinuyim that everyone is expected to keep to. However, the Mishnah says, every once in a while we have an exception to the rule of someone who's not obligated to keep to it. For example, says the Mishnah, when you have a melech, you have a king. So what are you going to tell the king? He has to take off his shoes and he's not allowed to wash his face. He's not going to look like a king then. And he has to uphold his dignity. So we say we have a special exemption for a king. Secondly, we have a special exemption for a chaya, for a woman who just gave birth. Third, we have a special exception, says the Mishnah, for a kala, a woman who just got married. We don't want her to look unpleasant for her husband. They just got married. They're just getting used to each other. We don't want him to see her when she's not looking her best. And therefore the Gemara says, we have a special permission for her to violate some of the Chamesha Sinuyim. Doesn't mean she's allowed to eat and drink, but it means she's allowed to do other things that otherwise would not have been permissible. Say the Rishonim, if this is an Isser D'Araisa at its core, if you say this is a real biblical prohibition, how do I have a right to make exceptions? The Torah never says such a thing. The Torah doesn't say, oh, Tanos Nafsho Seichem, except if you are a melech, or if you are a woman who just gave birth, or perhaps if you're a person who just got married. Torah never says such a thing. So how do I have a right to make an exception to the rule if all of these inuyim are daraisa? And in fact, Tosfos and the other Rishonim say, based on that question, it must be that not all the inuyim are isurim daraisa. It must be that many of them are drabanan. Otherwise, how do we explain why we have this difference between one category of people and the rest of the people that would be prohibited from doing that? However, as we know, the Rambam and other Rishonim assume that all five inuyim are daraisa. So how do you explain this? How do you explain our Mishnah? Our Mishnah is going to say that we find some that are exempt from performing these inuyim under certain circumstances. And don't say it's because of pikuach nefesh. A kala just got married. That's not pikuach nefesh. That's just because we want her to look nice for her husband. So why does she get an exemption? Why does she get a ptur? So the Ran asks this question, and the Ran explains as follows. The Ran says, you're right. Even though it's true that we assume that all the inuyim might be Aser D'Araisa, all of them are considered on the same level, the same category, they're all prohibited equally on Yom Tov, on Yom Kippur. Still says the Ran, we have a concept here called Nimsar Hadavar Lachacham, which means the Torah spoke in very general terms. And the Torah just said, Tanu es nafsho seichem. How are we supposed to know what that means? Well, the same way the Torah writes that we should make tefillin. V'hayu l'totafos ben enecha. I don't know what tefillin means. How should I know? The Torah doesn't describe it. Well, the Chacham came along and described what tefillin actually means for us. And we should make a box like this and have this many parshiyos in it. Torah never said what we're supposed to do. So here, says the Ran, it's the same thing. Tanu es nafsho seichem means the Torah just spoke in very general terms. However, it was up to the Chachamim to go ahead and define for us exactly what those general terms really mean. And therefore, the Chachamim, when they defined what the characteristics of the Isurim of Inui on Yom Kippur are, the Chachamim said, well, this is the way we understand it. It means these five things, Achilo, Shtia, Rechitza, Tashra, Shamita, Nilas, Asandal. However, they said, the Torah also let us define when it applies and when it doesn't. So the Torah allowed the Chachamim to completely define how Yom Kippur is going to be observed. And it shows you the power of Chazal. Incredible. That they have a right to say, this is where the Yisur applies, and this perhaps is where it doesn't apply. And these category of people are going to be included in it, and that category of people are exempt. It's amazing. And the Ran says, from here we see this idea of Nimsar Hadavar L'Chachamim, which is a very powerful idea. And it's something that applies not only here, it's something that we find and is relevant in other sugyas in halacha as well. For example, the Gemara says in Maseches Chagiga, the Gemara has a discussion about whether or not doing malacha on Chalamoid is considered an Isser D'Araisa or an Isser D'Rabbanan. Now many people don't realize that whether you assume it's Isser D'Araisa or D'Rabbanan, doing malacha on Chalamoid unless you're in extenuating circumstances is not permissible. Everyone agrees that it's Usr. The question is it Usr Midrabanan, or is it Usr perhaps Midaraisa? So again, we have Heterim, Davar Aved, we have certain Heterim that we allow, but in general terms we assume one is not allowed to do malacha that is unnecessary to be done on Chol HaMoed. In fact, the Chazon Ish, they write, I think in his biography, in the Pe'er Adar and in the Maisa Ish, they write that the Chazon Ish took this so far as to say you're not even allowed to carry a tissue unnecessarily in your pocket on Chol HaMoed. The Yisra of Hotzah applies on Chol HaMoed also. Every malacha, he said, applies on Chol HaMoed. Again, we don't take it that far. Most of us are not so careful about that. But the Chazon Ish himself, who was a big machmir in many areas, said that he was careful to empty out his pockets before he walked outside on Chol HaMoed, because it's a malacha that's not necessary. If you're going to need the tissue, so you need the tissue, it's mutter, it's yamtiv. But if not, he said that it's a malacha on Chol HaMoed that is not permissible. And so too the Achronim talk about, what about writing on Chol HaMoed? So how many of us think twice? We write down notes, we do all kinds of things. So the Achronim say, well, if you're learning Torah and you're afraid you're going to forget a great chiddush that you had on Chol HaMoed, so you're allowed to write it down. So we have that heter. What about everything else that we do? So the Gemara discusses all of this, and the Gemara wants to know what exactly is permissible and what is not. Well, the Torah certainly doesn't tell us, well, on Chol HaMoed you're allowed to do X, Y, and Z. The Torah doesn't define for us what we're allowed to do and what not. Says the Gemara, and this is the Lashon HaGemara Maseches Chagiga, I forgot to put it on here, Lo Masr Narkasav Ela Lachachamim. You're right. The Torah did say explicitly that you're not allowed to do malach on Chol HaMoed. We assume it's an Issa D'Araisa, perhaps. However, the Chachamim were the ones who defined for us Lo Malach Eze Yom Aser VeEze Yom Mutter. The Chachamim were the ones who define on which days of Yom Tov you're allowed to do these malachos, on which days of Yom Tov you are not allowed to do these malachos. Eze Malacha Asura VeEze Malacha Muteris. Which one we're going to allow, and which one perhaps we are not going to allow. So again, we find this concept where the Torah spoke in very general terms, didn't tell me exactly what I'm allowed to do and what I'm not, and it left it completely up to the Chachamim to determine for us exactly how to define the parameters of the Yisr of Malacha and Chol HaMoed. The Torah does not say. The Chachamim came along and said, well, you're allowed to do it under these conditions, under those conditions, if it's a davar of it, if it's something else. So we are having certain parameters that are defined clearly by the Chachamim that the Torah itself didn't say. We have another example of this the Beis Yosef gives. Very fascinating example. We have an Yisr D'Araisa B'chuko Seyam Lo Sey Lecho. Now that's a very fluid Isser that continues to change throughout every generation. How do you define what B'chuko Seyam Lo Sey Lecho? So some contemporary Achronim discuss, how are you allowed to wear a tie? To wear a shirt is not B'chuko Seyam. Everybody has to wear a shirt, otherwise you're not a respectable person if you don't wear clothing. Why do we need a tie? What's the significance of a tie? Does it keep me warm? No. Does it do anything for me? No. So why am I allowed to wear a tie? Some Achronim wonder that. Isn't that B'chuko Seyam Lo Sey Lecho? Everybody does it only because that's what they do. So why are we doing it? We just copy everyone else? So isn't that a prohibition of b'chukosayim lo seilechu? So obviously we don't accept that. And generally we assume b'chukosayim lo seilechu is only something that the non-Jews do out of religious purposes, for religious reasons. So the Gemara gives an example. In the times of the Gemara, again, today it's not so relevant. Although someone did mention it to me, I don't think he's correct, but someone did mention that maybe it is relevant. So the Gemara says that they used to have people who would be misaper kumi. It means they used to have a very particular haircut that they would get. I don't know if it was a very, what? So the Gemara gives a description of this haircut that they used to get, and that's the way all the non-Jews used to get a haircut. So the Gemara says clearly that would be a prohibition of b'chukoseim lo seilechu because all the non-Jews do it for a very specific purpose, and therefore the Jews aren't allowed to. However, the Gemara says in Baba Kama, Daf Pe Gimel, that there was a person by the name of Reuven ben Avtulmus, and they allowed him, this Reuven ben Avtulmus, they allowed him to go and get that non-Jewish haircut. Why? So the Gemara says, because he was Karav Lamalchus, because he was involved in the government, and since he was always in and out of parliament, and he was the one negotiating on behalf of the Jewish people, he had to look the part, he had to look put together, he had to look the right way, and because we wanted him to look like he fit in, therefore we allowed him to do it. So, the Beis Yosef asked the question, if we assume that B'chukoseim lo seilechu is an Isur D'oraisa, the Torah never said that, oh, if you work for the government, you're allowed to violate the Isur. The Torah doesn't say that. Look through all of Chumash, you won't find that. So what hetter did they come up with in Baba Kama Daf Pe Gimel? How can we say that for Reuven ben Avtulmus it's allowed to go and violate the Isur D'oraisa of B'chukoseim lo seilechu? What about the fact that the Torah never gave him a hetter? So what's the answer? Says the Beis Yosef, here once again we find the same thing. That the only way that we understand the prohibition of B'chukoseim lo seilechu is because it was Nimsar Hadavar L'Chachamim. Because the Chacham were the ones who defined for us in every given generation what exactly falls under this category of B'chukoseim and what perhaps doesn't. The Chacham in our generation didn't tell us that ties are considered to be B'chukoseim lo seilechu. So, therefore we're allowed to wear a tie. And many discuss, let's say the Shulchan Aruch, I think the Nosa Kalim talk about, why am I allowed to wear a cap and a gown at a graduation? What's the reason for that? What does it do for anybody? Nothing. And how is a doctor allowed to wear the coat? What does the coat do? It saves him from anything? No. So the Achronim give an answer. When you're doing something just simply for purposes of identification, when you walk into the hospital, it's important that we know this is the doctor, this is the nurse, and this is the nobody, and this is the janitor. Everybody has to know what the job is. If you're going to call upon the janitor by mistake to go and do the surgery, it's not going to be a good idea. Therefore, we assume when it's done for a very specific purpose, it's not just being done for no reason. That's not b'chukoseim lo seilechu. Where's the Torah say that? The answer is the chachamim were koveil for us what falls under the category of b'chukoseim and what perhaps does not go under that category of b'chukoseim. And therefore, because of that, we find yet another example of this concept of nimsar hadavar l'chacham. And you go through many different examples where we find that the halacha is clearly defined and determined by the way that the Chacham interpreted and understood what the parameters of any given Isser are, and that's what the Ran writes in our Gemara as well. It's true. We have a Machlokas HaRishonim, what exactly falls under the category of Inui. And some Rishonim say that all five Inuyim are under this category of Tanuas Nafshosechem. Aye, if that's true that all five are Daraisa, how does the Mishnah tell us here in the opening words of our Perek, in the last Perek in Yuma, how does the Mishnah tell us that we have an exception for a woman who just gave birth, and an exception for a woman who just got married, and an exception for a king? How can you have such a thing? You look in the Torah, it doesn't say Yom Kippur applies to everyone except for those three. The answer is, this is another one of those cases where we find Nimsar Hadavar L'Chacham, that all of this was given over directly to the Chachamim for their discretion, for them to decide and to determine where exactly the parameters of the Isser apply, and where perhaps they might not apply. And that's, I think, a very powerful concept. It's an important concept in halacha that comes up every so often, and it's a very powerful one when you think about it, that the chacham of any given generation have the ability to actually define and determine for us where an Isser might apply and where perhaps it might not apply at all, even when you're talking about something as severe as an Isser d'oraisa b'chukoseim lo seilechu, an Isser d'oraisa of malachan cholamoid, or in our case, the Isser d'oraisa of Tanu es nafshoseichem an Yom Kippur. So Amir Tashem.